That's why I'm all in bed. Nobody gives me sympathy.
Hello, and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the Pipe game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a Pipe show about past the horses. That was a really garbled one. Hi, I'm Fi. I remember this time. And I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
Oh, well, again, you've gotten it incorrect. You are speaking to your co-host, Sir Weirdington Esquire.
Yes.
Once again, the one and only. There were a few mistakes.
The last of their kind. The last of a dying race of sentient jukeboxes. So, hey, welcome back once again, folks. We're on chapter 21. We're on the boat arc. We're getting ready for 7 years of hiatus in Idolmaster.
Oh man, I forgot to be excited because I am pretty hyped for this boat. Okay. So to catch you, the listener, up, as though you haven't been following us the whole time, or in case you're a lunatic like myself, hey, welcome to the podcast. This should be a good first episode for you. It contains a boat.
Yes, a very good boat.
Let's see, last time on, I'm having a very difficult time remembering because it was all eclipsed by how great this boat, the Seaman, is.
The Seahorse. For those playing at home.
Careful when stepping aboard the Seaman. It is very slippery.
This was just all of the last, like, 20 minutes of the last podcast, by the way. So, you know, go back and listen to that, I guess, if you like that kind of joke.
Okay, we opened up with Horse Pool murdering a baby again. We'd gotten previous some foreshadowing at the beginning of last before last that, you know, has a history of baby murdering, but this time we see it. There's a duel. It seems Horsepool has been listening to our podcast because she calls out Blackjack on her bullshit.
Specifically calls out the child murders they did in previous chapters as being like justified mercy. As they've been like kind of rationalizing it up to this point.
But points out it super not really is. But in spite of that call out, nothing actually changes about the character's perspective on it because it was just an evil mutant horse trying to throw Blackjack off her game in the middle of a fight. So it's dismissed. Eventually, Dr. Professor Fallen, Dr. Professor the Edge, intervenes and disintegrates Horsepool completely. But because apparently Horsepool is basically a phoenix, because reduced basically to like particles, reduced to carbon, there's still a magic egg left over, which hatches into a baby Horsepool, a tiny baby pony version. And we're supposed to believe that, like, they have amnesia and that some alternate personality murdered that baby, but I know better. We here at the podcast know better. Because it's just too convenient. It's just too like, specifically, like, whining about me killing babies. Well, what if I'm a baby?
Yes. What if I'm a small child who crushes other small children?
Nothing of real significance. There might have been a flashback or two.
Yes, there's some memory orb usage. They try to go back to the stable, but they can't.
Yeah, they fight some manticores and a manticore controlling a half pony, half manticore, and eventually someone just says, "Why are you going over land? Like, you could get more than halfway there on boat." And someone says, "There's a boat," and by jolly, there is.
Yes.
The Seaman.
Yes, with its ragtag crew of pirates, which are just much more fun than the current cast. And I'm sad to see them go.
Well, we have they're two or three characters. Whole episodes with them. It's gonna be a ride.
Yay! So I think that about covers it. Is boat arc begin now? Though we do have a perk to get through. Last week's perk was Ferocious Loyalty, which gives Blackjack's crew of merry idiots better gun shoot skills. I don't remember. Yes, here. When dropped below 50% health, your companions temporarily gain much greater resistance to damage. I don't know how any of that will be tracked in the story. I doubt it will. I think this is just an interesting little, like, whatever moment. Fuck it, who cares? Perks are dumb. Hashtag perks are dumb.
I don't know. I think it almost makes sense that, like, Dr. Professor, Dark Science...
Dark Science.
...managed to find the resolve within her to do anything at all for the perhaps the first time in the story?
I suppose you're right. I didn't really think about that.
And also, meanwhile, Horsepool is very impressed by Blackjack's utter and unfailing loyalty and resolve to, like, hey, like, you just said that you watched me kill a baby, and you, like, you're gonna, like, let me keep hanging around? All right.
You're the idiot, I suppose.
That seems really dumb to me. And I'm me. I'm the person you're keeping around in question here, and I think that's dumb.
That's I directly benefit from this, and even I think it's stupid. Christ. So, that leads us into chapter 21, Waterfall, which is our current chapter. So we open up with a scene. I can't quite place the point of it. I think it was just another, like, fun character moment with Charity, good old capitalist child. Where they beg her to basically open a tab because they need something and they're basically out of money paying off the boats. And she relents because, of course, she could always relent at any time because she's a benevolent capitalist. It's kind of just a completely pointless scene.
But with backbreaking this... accruing interest, no doubt.
Oh, yes, with tons of interest. Including using the term, you're getting on my nerves interest rates. And that's not so hot. But a lot of this chapter is hard to pin down because it's a lot of travel. And there's a lot of stuff that happens that's just kind of... A lot of just set piece and description, which is interesting, and but like not valuable for the purpose of this podcast. Because it's completely worthless to the story outside of this little boating adventure. But yeah, we get a very long breakdown of the seahorse and how it works. It's like it's got a magic generator that makes it go. We get a little bit of a breakdown of our little pirate crew that are not really pirates, but whatever. They basically function like a pirate crew. They're a bunch of like
privateers.
Yeah, I guess privateers is the word for it. But they're a fun little band of merry mares. They also get like a big breakdown of how like the route they'll be taking and what they actually have to do. Thrush, which is the captain, establishes some hard rules, which is like, don't get off the boat, we'll just leave you. Don't shoot people off the boat because it'll alert them to our presence. And I think, I can't remember what the other rule is off the top of my brain, but it's basically like, do your generic hero stuff is the best way it can be summed up. But yeah, we fast forward to them actually being on the boat. We get some description of them, of the what the various members of the gang are doing on the boat while this is happening. They putter down the river for a while. They talk about river raiders, and BJ almost takes the opportunity to shoot one off the side of the boat when Skeleton Horse shows up to make fun of her. Basically saying, well, it's not an execution if I'm mercy killing a raider for having a disease that's incurable. And Skeleton Horse is like, that's a pretty dubious moral rationale you've got going on there, BJ.
Bone bummer at it again.
Bone bummer. I refuse to use his actual name of the dealer because, like, fuck you.
But... Bone bummer it is!
I also accept Bone Daddy, Skeleton Horse, Bones McKenzie, Mr. Ed. But yeah, it's bringing up the thing that, like, BJ insists she's not an executioner. And, like, what is the line between, like... executioner and killing people for a common good. They go over some rapids for the reason of tension, obviously. this scene is very complicated and hard to read because it's very chaotic, but basically like a bunch of ponies fall off the side and BJ saves them because she's like desperate to prove like Bone Daddy like wrong, because he's like, well, you know, you can't save anybody, and like, what are you doing out here in the first place? And she's like, I'm gonna save someone to fix my mental health. So she saves a bunch of horses off the side of the boat and is then hit by the boat. I can't remember how this exactly plays out. It's very confusing, but like it's a recurring gag in the story that BJ gets hit by a boat, because of course she gets hit by everything else in the story. So it has to be the most preposterous thing. But yeah, she saves these small horses from their watery graves. And then we get into a whole bunch of backstory flashback dreams that definitely a lot of backfill. It's primarily to make BJ seem less like a monster in the past. Because we learned that at one point BJ was kind of like something of a wide-eyed idealist. Like, she actually like genuinely believed in the idea that the security force was like there for good and actually like trying to help people, because like the recurring like refrain with the security is that security saves ponies or security saves lives. It's inscribed in the stables, like security offices, like roof, or I don't know what you call it, like the little like where like a placard that would say like the security, it just says security saves ponies. So at one point, like, BJ like genuinely believed in that ethos, but they're there to save people. And then we skip forward ahead a number of years in BJ's memories, where she has a conversation with Jin Rummy, her mother, when they're older, about how the security is trying to save people. The best it can do, or like the best possible way it can do that, is to like maintain order and maintain the status quo, because like we get into some backstory about like why the males are now just brood stallions in a fucked up matriarchal society, was that in the stable the role of overmare, the person who runs the stable, is inherited naturally. So it goes from mother to daughter. And what happened is that like they had a male, and like that wouldn't do, and he died by like an accident, and then the males like blamed that, and they decided on maliciousness and tried to revolt, and that's what led into the current system. Like that was what the rebellion that the males were doing was all about. But that stuff is not even important. That's not in the important part of this. This does not contribute to B-Jax. Yeah, B-Jack, that's the new name. B-Jax, like, actual, like, breakdown, like, her pessimism over the state of things.
But wait a minute, who's telling it? Like, is it just a spare memory orb that, like, we're getting this?
No, she's just flashbacking in her memories. Oh, like, she's just in a dream.
Okay.
Just thinking about the past.
A bunch of dudes riot over a stillborn. I'm.
No, it was like he was like I think it was like a child, and he was like killed. Like he was. That's what they rioted over. Like they rioted over like the injustice of like the gendered system. Which again would work if this story wasn't in a fucking vacuum, and that wasn't like a stupid fucked up thing to do.
Yeah, I'm also kind of dwelling on the weirdness of like. Security saves lives. Well, like, that makes almost a kind of sense if you have an open system wherein, like, there is the presumption of, like, invaders, there's the presumption of, like, that there is some sort of siege happening, but the vault is a closed system. Like, it has the population of a small town. A very small town.
A little bit more context that doesn't necessarily like fix this, but that slogan was written down by the original security officer that ran the security for the stable. So this would have been a pre-war person who believes in this. It would have made more sense if like it was said something like cops save lives or something like that, because like the context of the story is it uses the term security instead of using the term like police force. It's sort of analogous. It's sort of metaphorical. Like, whatever.
Well, yeah, but the thing I'm getting at is save your life from who and what? Your neighbor.
Yeah.
Your next door neighbor. Like...
Well, I think it's meant to it's meant to present the stable as a macro, like a microcosm of society. It presents the stable as an idealized, utopic almost society, like a kind of pseudo dystopic utopic society. Because the argument made for stables typically is that like shit might be bad in them, but at least you're not like dying like radioactive cancer. You know, you're it's the presentation of like society as being the only alternative to anarchy, like in the kind of lawless anarchy that like chuds think anarchy is.
I'm mostly just trying to address like being struck by the like siege mentality in among like a place where there aren't strangers.
Well, it's one of those phrases that only really works to be like, it's one of those phrases that like is the hopeful metaphor on which the main character lives their like ethos on. But it doesn't actually make any sense when you try to like digest it and think about it. It's just it's meant to be like the movie catchphrase one liner, like it's the popcorn, like, you know, either we stand together or fall like apart, that kind of like, I don't know, movie buzz kind of writing dialogue.
So after like a long period of self reflection, very exciting boat arc. I'm not regretting my enthusiasm at all.
Yes, it's a boat arc where very little boating actually happens. But anyways, we're not even out of this dream sequence yet. None of that matters because what the actual dream is about BJ complaining about her best friend Daisy, who is like one of the murder cops back in the stable 99, one of the aggro cops, has been like really mean recently and doesn't understand like why she's bullying people. And then it reveals by the end of the flashback that Daisy is being abused by her mother pretty viciously, and that's what's contributing to her being a bully, which is a very grade school interpretation, like grade school after lunch special, after school special, like interpretation of like why bullies like become bullies. And well, it's certainly possible for like people to become bullies because they're like abused and they're like taking that abuse on people that are weaker than them. A lot of them are just like hateful people that like don't know how to like socialize correctly with people because like they're not like educated like communally that way, like correctly. So like their only way of like interacting with other people is through harm. So like it's one of those things that kind of like falls deaf to like me personally. It's like and I think a lot of people who have ever actually like been on the other end of being bullied, it's like, oh, they don't like, it doesn't matter if they're being like abused, like they're just a hateful person.
Then there's also just the factor of like unaccountable power.
Yes, that too, that they're just so used to privilege that they excise power on others at a given whim. But yeah, there's a lot more of this that happens in a later backstory thing, but it's basically just to like, this is to like, part two will be coming up in a little bit, but it's to like explain why BJ is like a bastard, I guess. But anyways, BJ wakes up, coughs up a bunch of water, and finds that the ship is like down for repairs for a while, and they're now hanging out in a small fishing town that's on the riverside. Everyone seems very despondent, but like BJ's like, oh, I'm just gonna go check around, see if we can help these people because they seem pretty down. And Thresh is like, I'll give you like X number of hours and we're just gonna leave without you, kind of thing. Anywho, on to Riverside, the name of our town, our lovely little fishing town. BJ has some chat with the people there. She has a conversation with an old lady who is a living cliche. She addresses herself as Granny Fish, which kind of takes like BJ back because like it's, you know, very similar to her like actual real name, which is Go Fish for those that are playing at home. And she has a conversation with her, but since like she's the cliched old lady, she has like nothing but like near precognitive omniscient advice to give. It's like, oh yeah, you seem like the sort that's really hard on themselves, so like you should try to be like less hard on yourself. And she takes like one look at Fallen Glory and she's like, oh, you're pretending to be something you're not, and you have to like learn to live with yourself and your family. And it's just it's a really like obnoxious cliche. of just like, oh, I'm old, so I have near infinite knowledge of everything. I've lived in this podunk town and I just repaired nets, but apparently I know the secrets of the universe. But anyways, they get sent on a small quest when like one of the younger members basically blames the local sand dog population on the disasters of the town because they can't scavenge the area correctly because the sand dogs are there like squatting on an area and they want help getting those removed, and BJ decides to like, you know, give him a help out, like help out this town so it goes off a little bit better. But yeah, BJ is like, yeah, we're gonna do some good, we're gonna kill some people and do some good, and Lacuna is kind of like, I guess it's all relative, isn't it? Like, I'm sure the people you're about to go shoot aren't going to think too great about this greater good, your vibe you've been peddling. But then everyone just kind of dismisses the, like, idea of moral relativism, basically. Which is fucking hilarious to me.
That we've been, like, squatting on this whole, like, that this seems to be the primary question that interests Somber and, Do save the fly and starve the spider, or crush the spider to spare a fly?
Meh.
Screw spiders.
they dismiss it on the argument, like, at least right now, with 21 being like, oh, don't try to confuse her with any moral relativism. Because, you know, Blackjack's stupid, so she can't learn anything. I hate that characterization of this character. But yeah, anyways, we get into a gunfight for a while. They fight raiders for a long while. Lacuna actually proves herself to be the like sole, like truly valuable member of the team by immediately offering to help back up BJ being on point. They have a bunch of cool, like, getting to know each other kind of violence, where BJ like gets saved by Lacuna from getting blown up.
Okay, so on the words of this one river town, hey, those guys eking out an existence across the river, fuck them, they're making everything harder on us. Could you go kill them for us? Sure.
Yes.
and they immediately just go over and open fire? Was there any part?
Well, no,
any
the raiders jumped them, so, you know, they shot.
Oh, okay. So,
well, So something you're going to have to get into your head, though, about this setting. Raiders aren't people. They're meaningless chaff. They're just there to get shot at. They have no personalities, no identity. They're all suffering from brain-eating mad cow disease. They have nothing important to say, nothing valuable to say. A character who is infected with it is basically a zombie. So these aren't the people they're trying to exterminate, by the way. These are just raiders that just happened to be in the area, by the way. They're not even in the metro tunnels they were told to go into.
So on the way to murder some people they've never met. on a rival village's like account. It's some incidental bloodshed.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Just to keep the interest in the story high. But it's also mostly there to like have Lacuna and BJ like bond, because they after they like gun shoot a bunch of the raiders, they kind of like have like a bonding moment over firearms, because like Lacuna has an interest in heavy armor, heavy arms like a minigun, as I've said she has before. They have a conversation about the concept of unity and the idea that the goddess is a hive mind. Nothing can. Since they're all one big collective consciousness, nothing can, like, argue with the goddess. Like, there's no way of that happening, which is not how hive minds work, but don't worry about it. And that Lacuna is unique in that she's one of the very few in the unity collective that can, like, voice disagreeing and dissenting opinions with the goddess, which makes her, like, something of a little bit of a special case. But yeah, her and BJ bond over their mutual love of firearms. They are the best of friends. Anyways, time for more dumb bullshit. They finally get into the metro tunnels to find out they are heavily trapped. Like, there's explosives and tripwires everywhere, which means 21 gets his time to shine because he's their disarming expert, because he also makes explosives.
Continuously, inexplicably.
Yeah, I mean, someone has to put their points into demolitions. When they level up, and it might as well be him, I guess.
Okay.
But anyways, we get a kind of a moment that, I don't know, I'll just let it breathe for itself. An explosion goes off that BJ barely manages to save 21 from, and 21 has a small, well, a moderate, medium, can you have a medium anxiety attack? He has a medium anxiety attack because, like BJ, like, being physically on him, like, immediately brought him back to the stable. Which, I mean, is, like, actually, like, weird, like, that they, like, that Sombra remembered that, like, oh yeah, this character is damaged beyond repair and needs, like, help. Anyways, he has a bit of a freak-out moment, basically, like, Horsepools, like, just tells him, like, oh yeah, just go cool off. BJ, go be somewhere else so that he doesn't have a freak-out moment anymore and he can calm down. Horsepool then plays psychiatrist. Well, not plays psychiatrist. For complicated reasons, Horsepool basically has a degree in psychology. in psychiatry.
All right, continue.
but yeah, she plays psychiatrist at 21, and it's basically like you just because you're free doesn't mean that like you're not gonna be able to fix being in the stable. And he kind of like they come to the realization that he kind of like regressed into like I don't even call it like I was trying to think of the word for this, but like when someone's been like conditioned to do something, like being like a fuckmare, like basically regressing back into that state because of like the circumstances, and Horsepool basically offers to like help him work through this in some way.
Trust me, a child murderer who cannot die and is completely and inured to the concept of consequences
but has a degree in psychology. Yep.
I mean, if you can somehow like pull out before he convinces you to eat yourself, Hannibal Lecter is accomplished.
Yeah, basically, that's basically what we got going on here. But yeah, that scene kind of gets wrapped up. Then we get into some stuff that is incredibly tone deaf, and crass. But let's get into it. So they find a bunch of newspapers pertaining to the what's known as the Great Diamond Dog relocation. So to roll back to play the film, to play the reel, to get the slides in the projector. So in Fault Equestria lore, there is in MLP there is a race of creatures which are bipedal dog people who just want like gems and emeralds and diamonds and stuff called Diamond Dogs. In this story, they've been elevated into an entire culture. Twilight Sparkle did like eminent domain on their homelands, and they were forced to relocate because they needed the land for like testing purposes, and they needed the gems that were in it because they need gems to fuel their magic fetish technology. So all of the Diamond Dogs were mass relocated in what was being known as the Trail of Broken Diamonds, which is an incredibly crass callback to the Trail of Tears, a real thing that happened to actual Native people in America. And the being forced to have nowhere to go, the furiously fought back and rioted against Equestria to try and get their homeland back. But it didn't matter because their homeland had been so like polluted and poisoned with all the testing that had been done there, that it wouldn't matter if they would go there, it would just kill them. But a subset of those were convinced by Golden Blood, because of course they were, to relocate. They changed their culture to sand dogs, and they helped build the city of Gustavsburg. So that's a whole thing. That's an incredibly like tone-deaf and inappropriate thing to put into story, but fuck it, whatever. We're in a post-apocalyptic wasteland where there were zebra ghettos, so like fucking just tack this on.
I am Andrew Ryan. I understand that you First Nations people have been displaced. Come
work for me in Rapture. I mean, you're not wrong. We have John Galt going up to like a bunch of Native chiefs and being like, "Hey, come work for me. I'll pay you barely anything." And we'll rebuild Naziville.
You know what would be really stick it to the white man? Building an entire city for a different white man.
Yeah, perfect. There's no dissonance here. Perfect actions and decisions. They then run into a pair of sand dogs, one small child, and a incredibly cybered up sand dog named Rover. We're in Shadowrun territory, folks.
But pastel and like these are baby toys.
Yes. Yeah.
It should never be forgotten that these are baby toys. This is a cute bipedal doggy.
It's covered in cybernetics, and I assume has got like, I'm assuming given how crass this is wearing like a war bonnet, because like, fucking who needs subtlety?
It's also apparently David Bowie reference. I'm trying to look up these diamond dogs.
Oh yeah,
because I need to.
You need to look at what they look like. Okay. Yeah, they're anthropomorphic dogs with little leather jerkins on.
All right, they're kobolds. Yes. they're Gygaxian kobolds. Okay.
Yes, but like, and they talk in weird broken English. So like, of course, that's a great like other thing to like adopt into your like fucked up like.
Oh, okay. So like the rough design of these things tells me that they're introduced as baddies.
Yes, they're antagonistic, but they're also like really one dimensional. Like the whole joke of them is just that like we want gems, we want minerals. Give us the minerals. That they're basically orcs. But now they're just an over elaborate Native American metaphor in this. But anyways, Rover calls out BJ. Like, what the fuck are they even doing there? Like he does the thing of like the weird way that like a lot of like people write natives where they're like they tend to talk about like white men in the really broad sense, like they always compare it to the broad atrocity, which is, it's a weird cliche to have of your of like native characters that like they, whenever they talk about it, it's to sell the idea that like the atrocities done to the native people were like largely in the past and things are okay now, which is not true.
Slavery and genocide doesn't leave a legacy. Move on!
Yeah, oh, it happened 1,000 years ago. But that's the thing. It's not like it hasn't stopped happening. Like, consider the fucked up history of the, like, my land of the Great White North, fucking Canada. We have boondoggled so much bullshit in the last couple of years related to our First Nations population. So, like, I don't want to hear this shit coming from fucking inept, inarticulate writers.
Hey, stop being so resentful. Forget your scars. Like, for instance, the fact that your homeland is now, like, continues to be ruined and uninhabitable. That you are, like, like, get over it. Like, yeah, so you're, like, meeking out an existence in a environment that is ill-suited to you. But, like, all the people who did that are gone. Like,
I'll be frank, though, that I do really like Rover as a character because he is just tired of this bullshit and he has every reason and right to with the context of this fucking story. But he basically, like, tells them to bail. And BJ does the whole, like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know. And it's like, well, what did you expect? Like, you were told to, like, go kill these people. But now you feel bad for them. So, like, there you go. But they managed to convince Rover, at least, that they've killed a bunch of raiders in the area. And they probably have food. Because his sand dog people are dying of starvation. Because they can't collect resources. Because they'll be killed on sight by a lot of other folks. Because this is the land of ultra-racism. If it doesn't walk on four legs, it's an enemy. But and they also swear that they're going to convince the village to start trading with them, and a peaceful agreement is sort of brokered between the two. It's the kind of peaceful agreement that can only be settled in this kind of story via holding a gun to one side's head and saying you're going to do this or we're going to come back and kill all of you. Including, apparently, that adorable grandmother. Or at least insinuated. They don't, like, outright say it.
But if this story had any self-awareness, any sort of consistency of writing and a solid sense of humor, by the time they got back, the deal would already have been arranged. But, well, I knew that you would inevitably talk to those doggies.
Since I'm an omniscient old lady. I'm a character cliche, you know.
All according to Kaikaku.
Translator's note, Kaikaku means plan. But yeah, so that racism is now defeated. Congratulations, Blackjack. So, moving along in their adventures on the small amount of dry land that they're on, they bust into an OIA-like regional office, and remember the OIA is the Golden Blood. This was secretly my plan all along organization. So, we're going to move right into a memory orb instead of explaining what's in the OIA, because there's nothing important besides the memory orb. Is the noise I'm trying to make for this.
It's good noise. Good bit of Foley.
Whenever I read these, for whatever reason, my brain always made me, like, made the Doctor Who, like, TARDIS popping in noise.
Yeah, the...
Yeah, the piano the on a... Saw, on a the, like, yeah, the key on a piano wire noise. But anyways, we are now in Golden Blood's body. Golden Blood is super fucked up because he just got back from a war crime happening where a school got not blowed up, it got dirty bombed by the zebras, and Golden Blood is the sole survivor of that atrocity, but his body's all mangled up to hell from it. He's been there being tended by Fluttershy, and they're both giving each other, like, the looks, you know, the looks of a medic in a story who's tending towards a wounded soldier that tells you that you know they're going to end up together. This is incredibly fucked up because in original, in Fallout Equestria, it implies that Fluttershy is gay, and this is some fucked up rewriting.
So that damn Zigzor can...
He's just too damn charming. So that's hot. Look forward to the assassination of other canon lesbian characters in Fallout Equestria, with Rarity and Rainbow Dash both not being gay all of a sudden, even though it was firmly established in the original story that this was true. So that's neat. But anyways, the actual meat of this is Luna shows up and she's basically like, "Tell me how to run my government," and Golden Blood's like, "What if we establish evil ministries that run everything?" He doesn't say it that way, obviously.
Nope. Too late. Fucking self-insert.
So it's basically, he went, "So, have you read 1984? Because I think it would be a perfect way to establish a government."
Right. Okay.
And Luna was like, "I also, for some reason, believe Orwellian nightmares have anything to do with leftism and not deep-seated conservatism." But anyways, out of the memory orb again, because that's all that's important in that, is that we've found out that, of course, Golden Blood also came up with all of the ministries, and he's the man who sold the world.
Well, he's so fucking ridiculously masturbatory. I am surprised that the memory didn't end with him turning to a mirror and saying, "Don't you think so too, Blackjack?"
Okay. Let's put the pin on that idea for later.
No.
It's not this character, but there's basically that moment. Yeah. Yeah. Guess what? The story's really dumb, as it turns out.
Oh, the nightmare's real.
The nightmare is real. All right, we got to come out of this memory arc. BJ, we're back on the open water again. They're plodding along through the river. BJ chats with the captain, and they basically fill each other in on their dumb bullshit backstories. BJ fills in that she killed children. Captain Thrush is like believes that she killed her father by not going back and saving him from a bunch of pirates that are about to kill him. And she has a reasonable backstory of why she might feel guilt, while like BJ's is absurd. BJ ruminates a bit on what her virtue actually is in this story. BJ decides to conk out for the night, and we then have more past flashback memories that fill us in over what happened to BJ's optimism. So we find out that BJ took the security saved ponies to heart, and she's like, "Well, I'm part of the security. I'm going to go arrest Daisy's mom for abusing her," and not realizing that like cops aren't supposed to arrest cops, and so like Daisy's mom just gets off scot-free because that's what happens, and everyone just kind of gets mad at BJ for like believing the system works at all when everyone knows that this is just how these things go, and then Daisy kills her mom via a door accident, and BJ realizes that society's true face of never try, never ever make any efforts to do anything, you'll just be beaten down. Imagine a hoof on humanity's face forever.
Do you want a vision of the future? Imagine a hoof stomping on every pony's face forever.
Yes. But yeah, so she wakes up from a start from the memory of Daisy's mom getting crushed by a door. And then she finds that the Lacuna is there, and Lacuna is like, "Hi, I don't want to alarm you, but I can read your dreams." And BJ's like, "That's kind of an invasion of privacy." And Lacuna's like, "Well, I also don't trust any of you, and why would I? So the easiest way to do that is just like look at your dreams and see if you're fucked up and evil on the inside." Which, I mean, is kind of fair. Like, it is an invasion of privacy, but like at the same time, like, if you saw BJ, would you trust her? But yeah, we learned that Lacuna can like piggyback on people's dreams, which is just an interesting quirk detail thing. So we transport to the next morning when they're back on the boat and they're boating along, and they decide to listen to the radio. And we get a reprisal of DJ Human coming back on the radio. DJ Pwn 3 gives them some news reports. We get the same sort of general things of like, hey, security's awesome, she's doing cool things. But we also get warned of some later plot hooks. Apparently, the Raiders are bolstering in size suddenly, which probably relates to that, like the fact that the Pegasi are poisoning the place with disease-filled fruit. The zebras are getting squirrely. Zebra snipers have been taking pot shots at people recently, and you should watch out for that. Oh, and also the local slave market has been dismantled by a bigger, more powerful slave owner named Red Eye, who, if you're interested in Red Eye, read Fallout Equestria, because he's in that. But yeah, so the bounty is basically gone now. Like, the bounty will no longer be backed on BJ, basically. So that plot thread just goes nowhere. It just peters out into the vapor. Stay tuned for more raiders and more zebras, though, I suppose.
Oh boy, okay. what a trade.
Even more not happening, not happens. All right, on to my last page of notes. Get excited. So, the gang decides to stop at another location, which is called Floatsim, but it basically is just Pony Innsmouth. The area is heavily dominated by taint, so all of the ponies there are, like, sort of freakishly mutated. And they're very insular and xenophobic. And they will kill you for no reason at all, basically. So they kind of just boat on by, and they get told, like, don't try to fix anything, BJ, or we'll leave you there. But that doesn't matter, because a scuffle happens in the middle of the town, and Rampage of all horses decides to intervene. She goes all weird cop mode, and she starts like yelling out about resisting arrest and writing a, like basically rattling off citations they're all doing, and she's She starts fighting them all. BJ decides to remedy the situation by injecting high-caliber antipsychotics directly into Rampage's head via sniper rifle until she calms down. So we're up to... By the way, for those counting, we're up to three different personalities. One's a child killer, one's a psychiatrist, and one of them's a cop.
Super. I'll tell you when I care or I believe that these are separate personalities.
Well, you don't have to care, but the audience can keep track. It's a fun little game.
No.
How many personalities does Rampage have?
No, you don't get to. I forbid it. Okay, you, listener, you give a single shit about this supposed multiple personality angle.
Well, I guess it's out of my hands. Who am I to argue with the jukebox? But yeah, one last detail of this particular scene is on their way back to the boat, there is a scavenged like kid who's mutated up who is selling junk, and BJ spies one of the silver bullets that the fucking magic super gun carries is in a little display case, and she like pays him like shit caps for it because he doesn't know what it is. Like it's just like a dumb bullet. For all he knows, it's a vibrator for like its size and shape. But yeah, so BJ now has another one of the silver bullets. Stay tuned for when it gets used. Yeah.
I mean, the last one was used on a helicopter. Like, I don't...
So get ready with what the next thing is going to get used on. get ready to be unexcited. So the gang then gets stopped by a bridge that's, like, both controlled by the Steel Rangers and the Reapers. And there are, like, an uneasy truce between the two of them. And BJ... I was like, okay, either side is going to shoot us if we try to go through the bridge. So their like decision is to break the truce by throwing some dummy explosives onto the Reapers and convince them that the Steel Rangers did it. And they decide and they basically manage to get out through the ensuing gunfire from it. This will not have any sort of consequences whatsoever. Obviously, I'm lying, but obviously, stay tuned for when that comes up. Yeah, and then they finally get all the way through the river, and they break out into the open sea, and BJ is enraptured by its intense beauty of the open ocean. And she kind of has a moment of self-doubt, where she decides, like, well, maybe we should just abandon this dumb, stupid, like, quest, and just join up with these sea pirates, and just become sea adventurers. And that would be a much better story than the story that we got, but sadly that's not what happens, obviously.
Whoops.
She gets re-resolved in her quest to do good. And as they're, like, making their way around the coastline, they spy the Steel Rangers, like, base operations, which is a giant battleship that's been, like, moored to a naval base. It can't boat, but it has giant guns on it that they've been trying to get operational for the last couple of years, which would be really dangerous because it would tip the precarious battle scale that the faction... I don't know what that sentence was going to be. The precarious, like, balance was the word I was looking for, not battle, that the factions have going on. So they're just like, whoa, I hope that doesn't happen. We're almost done. We got one last major scene, and then we get to address any pins. So they are now officially off the boat. The boat only lasted one chapter. I was wrong about this last week, and I'm sorry for anyone that was excited for like a myriad of boat adventure, but we have our one chapter boat arc. Anyways, so they make it back onto dry land, and they kind of have a like sort of memory tour moment where they like, it's like, oh yeah, this is when we shot horses here, and this is when she shot horses there. This is when we cleared out that school and fought up that in that donut shop. And they have like a mild conversation with someone before about the idea that like the Raiders have gotten really bad in this area. And so they're kind of worried about the Stable 99, and they redouble their efforts to get in there. They find that the mine shaft that the stable was protected by is mostly intact. And BJ opens up the door and she's like, runs in ahead. The rest of her crew, because she's like, oh, I'm gonna go see all my fashy friends and maybe play some cards and stuff and see how the crew is doing, which she is then immediately wafted with a dank smell of death and decay, and she bumps into a corpse, which she realizes almost immediately is her own mother's decapitated head on a pike with the words traitor written underneath it. And then the chapter ends with a cacophony of evil giggling and laughter while the Overmare's like voice comes on the intercom system, like welcoming BJ back to the stable. Surprise! The Raider gang's at the stable 99 the whole time.
Okay.
So next chapter, we're going to be dealing with that. So, oh boy. Next chapter is going to be a heavy chapter. So get ready for that. I know I'm excited. I'm excited because this is when the shit swell really starts to get up to knee height. But, yeah. So look forward to Stable 99 rumble in the cave. But other than that, that's the end of our chapter. Got any like things you want to air out? Any laundry you want to get out weird before we do our wrap up and depart?
No, there's not a lot to say. Just that like from the handful of things, it did sound like it had the potential for like a couple chapters worth of like stuff to do on the boat. But I mean, I guess good on Zomber for, I don't know, I have mixed feelings. Like, it, on one hand, you should feel grateful that, like, the story doesn't take a dead stop to go on sea adventures for seven chapters. But on the other hand, what's on the other side of the filler is the main story. In which case, yes. I would much rather have a rip-roaring sea adventure for a few chapters.
Can we go back to the boat? Yeah, I guess like one last thing I personally wanted to air out before we go is something I kind of noticed, especially with last chapter, because we kind of discussed about the idea that like Somber isn't beholden to like make this, and like therefore like I want to partly apologize if we come across as like, especially me, as like nitpicking details of the story, which is certainly not my intent. And that's certainly not my intent to, like, punch down or anything, because that's also, like, patently false, at least in this community. This is a very well-respected and well-liked, if somewhat controversial and divisive piece of work. It's considered part of the Big Five, which are the Big Five Fallout Questor stories, which means nothing to most people who are just reading this for the shit of it. But, like, my point is that, like, it's not like I'm fighting, like, a small baby. It's more like I'm fighting somewhat of equal level, power level, I suppose. And also my point too is that like I'm to not necessarily deride the person who is Somber. Like the important disconnect to understand is that like the author of this work may be a completely different person than the person that Somber is now. But that doesn't matter for the purposes of reviewing this work. We are talking about the person that was this when writing this and what their choices of points to articulate and decisions to make and ethos and ideologies to convey, and how they're so awful and toxic, and how those potentially make a point on a broader societal trends, and how they make broader trends on media. Like, I think fan fiction is a fascinating case of a work that gets overlooked because it's considered like lower work inherently, and like which harkens back to the way comics were for a really long time. They were considered a lower piece of work and therefore like not worth reviewing, which I think is wrong. Like, I think all creative work is inherently art, and all art is inherently worth criticism. It doesn't matter that only 100,000 people read this. It doesn't matter that only 1,000 people read this. I think I still think the bigger points can easily be downscaled and vice versa in both cases. And that's just something that's been on my mind a lot with this story, because I think it'd be really easy to just seem it. It's very easy, I feel, when people do podcasts about fan fictions to just mock them on their face of like, oh yeah, this is Naruto expanding into a giant big dick anime lady. Like, isn't that weird? And like, it's, but never discussing like the inherent, like why fan trends exist and like why those things become popular.
How did this get into like the ethos? Like,
yeah.
What is it about this that speaks to people?
Yes, exactly.
And what it is about so many people that, like, this is, like, where the gestalt goes. Like, where, like... Yeah, I'm a firm believer in... I disdain the concept of low art. That is to say that I immediately will respect you, whoever you are, a lot less instantaneously if you describe something as low art dismissively.
Because if you're going to treat art like a popularity contest, then, like, what's the fucking point in talking about work at all?
I guess the only thing I have to walk away with is that, like, in amongst, like, lost and, you know, failed ideas, I do sort of like the idea of, so horse pool and, giant goth Lolita horse,
yes.
Not quite a princess. Duchess. Duchess black satin frills. Being able to, like, of her many abilities, incidentally, being able to observe dreams. And meanwhile, like, all of Horsepool's, like, myriad random powers and supposed excess personalities. Does lead me into, like, one of my favorite, kind of, like, little used tropes, like, something that, like, isn't seen an awful lot, but, like, a meditation on hanging out with, like, badly damaged Ubermensch, like, flailing useless Ubermensch is my favorite thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do like the idea of, like, our protagonist is endowed, whether she likes it, like, she is at heart a gun. She is a gun was destroyed in a furnace, and she was the reincarnated soul of the weapon.
Yeah, from a phoenix, she rose from the gun ashes.
And so she just has the preternatural ability to kill anything.
Yes.
So it seems. And meanwhile, like, she's surrounded by these freaks who possess, like, basic deific powers, like classic Greek myth style deific powers, or just broad myth.
Well, one of the self-imposed descriptions of the gang that I do like: the broken wares with damaged goods. Like, that's the crew. Like, they're all like, I think one of the things that charmed me and appealed to me until I realized that, like, the story sucked is the notion of, like, these badly broken people who, like, sort of utterly codependent on each other. Like, it never really, like, does this well, because, like, the actual conclusion of this was the realization that, like, oh no, at some point, like, we actually all became friends for real, and, like, the joke really was that, like, the damaged goods were the friends we made along the way. Like, those were the real friends. Like, they but, like, it never, like, owns this. And I'm going to talk about in some later story stuff, like, some of the more problematic, like, relationship in the story is largely because, like, the author doesn't get the concept of codependency, and that codependency is not equivalent to friendship or romantic relationships, but they just don't seem to understand that. And that might be a byproduct of their self-described, like, chronic, like, depression, like, their dysthymia. I don't know how to pronounce it. And, like, that indicates a sick mind, I guess, like, someone who actually needs genuine help. But, like, it's a shame that, like, it kind of, like, it impacts the story in a way that, like, I don't think the author intends, that these characters actually are kind of incapable of getting help, and the story isn't necessarily about them becoming better, I suppose.
Oh, well. Anyway, the only thing I had to say was it happens in some like weird fan arty projects. There's a deviant artist, I think it's called Bomango, who has this sort of, like, manic pixie muscle girl character. It's mm-hmm. It's technically an original comic, but it's sort of like, it's a weird kind of wish fulfillment thing, in that, like, it's a it's an original product, fan art. It's a fan art of itself, somehow. So it has, its basic premise is that, like, there's this, like, teenager, who's fallen in love with an entity that is effectively a deity, but kind of in the way that Greek deities are.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, I'm almost interested. Like, it's one of the many drop balls as I said at the beginning of this, but it's...
We're just going to see more of the same kind of thing. Like, it's... Project Horizons is disappointing because it's so... It's almost a work of... Like not a work of art. Like, it's almost, like, actually quality fiction in a bunch of ways. And, like, I don't even think I feel like I'm being defensive about that. Like, I think that's, like, a genuine thing to say about it. It's... A lot of the stuff is almost good. It just doesn't hit the mark because, like, a lot of it just comes down to, like, bad politics and bad ethos. Like, this is coming from a writer who doesn't get how to interpret it their own baggage and how their characters don't get to interpret their own baggage that actively harms the final product. Like, every single character is in a death spiral, and we're going to have to see when we, like, that comes to head as an audience, whether or not we can believe Somber's interpretation of how to fix a death spiral.
Oh, almost certainly not. I mean, we've long since established that Somber is like, very lonely because they don't seem to have a conception of what... They don't seem to even be able to conceive of a healthy relationship. They've... Like, it's something to be pitied that, like, they either, like, have never really experienced it or, like, have never been, like, wouldn't know how to recognize it.
Yeah, even if they saw it, yeah.
All right, so,
on that downer note.
Rate, review, hearts.
You can find me at Thou Art Fi. Send us tweets with the hashtags, The Land Friendship Forgot, or Fanfic of a Fanfic. We'll amass a pile of letters that we will then answer on air. We'll give you shout-outs. We'll try to, like, clarify details that I may have missed as we go along. Bicker at me and tell me how I'm wrong about a myriad of small plot details.
We double dog dare you. Double diamond dog dare you.
But yeah, I think that's our episode. So Weird, you want to play us out?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to bring out the guitar for this. This has all been a terrible mistake.